We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, everybody.
Congressman, we see how Democrats are in the minority in your chamber, the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate. They hold a minority of legislatures and only about 16 governor's offices across the country. Why aren't Democrats proving more appealing to Americans?
Well, I think part of it is the way redistricting is done and the Republicans have done.
It's got to be more than redistricting.
Sure. I think that we have to get better at articulating a much stronger economic message. The fact that we lost, for example, at least the electoral vote in places like Michigan and Pennsylvania should not have happened. And we've got to relook at why didn't our economic message of trying to see all boats rise, especially focusing on the middle class and making sure that the middle class has robust job opportunities, why that message did not resonate with the American people. The Republicans have traditionally, by policy, looking at supporting big business and the wealthy 1%. And somehow the middle class feels that they have been ignored. And we are going to have to redouble our efforts on making sure that we have a sharp and crisp and direct message to middle class voters and people at the low income scale that we have been traditionally aligned with, and saying that we hear you and we're doing our best to double down and making sure that those job opportunities are here and that we want to continue to see the middle class grow stronger.
You point to the need for a better economic message, and certainly that's part of politics, but it seems as if many of President Trump's supporters are supporting him for emotional reasons. They have a nostalgia for an earlier time in America. In some ways, they want to set back the clock. Do Democrats have an effective response for that?
Yeah, I think what we have in a situation where the global economy has changed, and by the way, some of these trade agreements have been part of the problem, where we've seen jobs or companies leave or to go overseas, and middle class blue collar jobs, for example, have gone away. So we need to focus much more on what I've been doing. Certainly, is how do we make sure we have a trained workforce to do the jobs that are available today and well into the future? Some type of advanced training is always going to be important, and we have to make sure that our people have the skills to do the job that are available today and well into the future.
Let's go to Scott.
Do you think part of the Democratic message is too focused on social issues, too much talk of transgender bathrooms, gay marriage, abortions, etc., and not enough focus on economic issues, too much the faculty lounge and maybe not enough the union hall?
There's a lot of people that are afraid out there. They're struggling, that either they haven't seen a raise in years or they're struggling harder and harder to make the paychecks go further, stretching the dollar as far as it can go. And people are concerned about, you know, are the jobs that even are here today, are they going to be there tomorrow? Is someone going to be able to keep their job? We need to reinstill a sense of confidence and certainty to people that they are going to have robust job opportunities both now and in the future. And we need to make sure that we're communicating that message and focus on it like a laser.
Now, you talk about free trade, but free trade has brought a lot of good stuff to Rhode Island, a lot of jobs. I'm wondering how much of the lack of manufacturing jobs is due simply to automation and the creative destruction of capitalism, the stuff that's been going on since, you know, the spinning jenny put the weavers in Manchester out of business.
Some of these trade agreements, there's been winners and losers. And I'm no doubt, you know, we can point to situations where there's been plenty of winners as well as losers. But I will say this, it's been my experience, my observation, and in talking to business owners, that our workers, our companies have been hurt more than helped in many cases, certainly in manufacturing. We need to have a rebalancing so that these trade agreements are more fair. We're going to be looking at perhaps renegotiating NAFTA. There is no doubt that manufacturing has changed. It's not our father's or grandfather's manufacturing processes anymore. High-end skills to be able to run this equipment. And right now, there are so many businesses that are struggling to find these workers. These are good-paying, high-wage jobs, that these are great opportunities, but we have to make sure that our young people and our workforce right now has that training to do those jobs.
We're talking here with Congressman Jim Langevin. Congressman, one of the differences between yourself and your colleague, Congressman David Cicilline, is that you serve on the House Armed Services Committee. He does not. Over the course of your career, you've gotten more than $500,000 in contributions from the defense industry. I wonder if you think that that level of spending power by the defense industry leads to bloat in the military budget and unnecessary military programs?
Well, I always look at the defense budget as what is absolutely essential. and no contribution that I receive ever comes with any strings attached. I would like to believe that anyone who is giving to me believes in good government and the job that I'm doing, and they support good policy.
How about the SBINet virtual border fence that was built by Boeing? That cost about $1 billion, was seen as a failure. I believe you voted in support of that. Is that correct?
Well, I certainly support use of technology to better manage our border security.
Did you vote for that project?
If it was in the overall defense bill, then I guess you'd say that I did vote for it. But look, I believe in use of technology. I think we can leverage that capability, and I'm not sure I'd have to look back at the reason for the failure as you describe it. But using technology is a win as far as I'm concerned. It's much preferable than spending $10 billion on a wall that's not going to really provide real security.
Speaking of your colleague, Representative Cicilline from the 1st District, we're looking at the next census. It's likely there's not going to be 2 House seats in Rhode Island. Would you run a primary against David Cicilline if you still wanted to stay in the House?
We'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. I'm right now focused on doing my jobs, the congressman from the 2nd District.
You have a profile as a opponent of abortion rights. There are some supporters of abortion rights who are very concerned that the U.S. Supreme Court will overturn Roe v. Wade. Do you think that's a realistic possibility that the High Court will overturn that decision?
I don't know, obviously, what the court will decide. It's hard to predict. The balance of the court right now has not changed, and that with the newest appointment replacing Scalia, that vacancy. As you know, I'm a proponent of trying to reduce unwanted and unintended pregnancies. I believe that we need to have more sex education, especially among young people. And I support, for example, use of contraception to prevent unintended, unwanted pregnancies. And that's where I've always looked to try to find that common ground of where people that are pro-life or pro-choice can work together to reduce unintended pregnancies, and including the fact I've also supported funding for Planned Parenthood because, a lot of the work that they do does focus on distributing contraception as well as sex education and family planning. Obviously, the important work that they do in providing women's health and things like pre-screening for cancer and with cervical cancer or breast cancer. But there's a lot of women's health issues and good things that they do.
Do you support the Roe v. Wade decision, or would you prefer to see it overturned?
Anytime that laws are made, it should have a groundswell of support overall. And so I'm not focused on whether Roe v. Wade should be overturned. I believe that there's a lot of work that we need to do to prevent unwanted pregnancies, and those are the things that I'm going to continue to focus on. And
you won't answer whether you support or oppose that decision?
Well, you know, my position on abortion comes from a very personal one, in that when I was 16, I almost lost my life. My life hung by a thread, and for whatever reason, I got my second chance. I would feel a hypocrite if I were to take away someone else's chance at life. And so that's where I primarily come to that perspective. And I respect women's choices and others who view the choice issue differently. But that's why I want to focus as a policymaker. Where is the broadest base of support? What can we work on together? And clearly, I think reducing unwanted, unintended pregnancies is a real common ground area, and promoting sex education and family planning. Those are things I think pretty much all of us can agree on.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And Rhode Island's 2nd District Congressman Jim Langevin.
Thank you. Great to be with you both.